There was someone in your family who was no good.
Uzbeks.
Someone who embarrassed you.
Uzbeks.
Someone who constantly took but never gave.
Uzbeks.
If there was someone like that in your family.
Uzbeks.
You would do something, wouldn't you? Mother Russia has someone like that in her family.
Uzbeks.
But she can't do something about it without your help. Experience has taught us not to make martyrs of our enemies, so leave them alone.
Uzbeks.
Don't give them money or matches.
Uzbeks.
And don't encourage them to gamble and drink. Uzbeks, they are the weak link in the great chain of socialism.
Change has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
From the Uzbek-free heartland of America, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and I'm on Uzbek Alert. And I can tell you right now that we don't have any in our backyard, but seriously, we may have soon. The United States of America, who knows what our reason for being in Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan is, but I'll bet you anything we're there.
Welcome, by the way. This is June 13th, 2010, as we record this. And as we record this, all kidding aside, there is the makings of a war in the stands. And it is the kind of conflict that we won't pay attention to generally. Collectively as a people, we won't pay much attention to it because it's someplace we've never heard of and it doesn't involve that many people to begin with. But the big players in the geopolitical chess match of the world are very heavily invested in Central Asia, and that's why we bring it up.
In fact, I think you could do another version of Stephen King's book, The Stand, which is about a chess match essentially between God and Satan, and call it The Stands, which would be a proxy war between Russia and the United States.
That's a really good point. What we're talking about specifically is news reports coming out of Central Asia today that some 75,000 Uzbeks have fled Kyrgyzstan, Western Kyrgyzstan. Now, you have to go to a map and look this up, as I did, in order to figure out where exactly all of this is. But Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, all of them gathered in there together in that general region east of the Caspian Sea, and between the Caspian Sea and China. They are overshadowed, of course, by Russia to the north, and Uzbekistan to the south touches on Afghanistan, which is why the United States has some military bases in Uzbekistan. This region of Kyrgyzstan borders on Uzbekistan, and the specific city of Osh and the territory around it in Kyrgyzstan is predominantly ethnic Uzbeks. They've been chased out of the city of Osh, which, according to what I read today, is essentially been destroyed. And 75,000 people, mostly, according to news reports, old men, women, and children, have fled across the border into Uzbekistan. The Kyrgyz have requested assistance from Russia. And bear in mind that Russia and the United States both have military bases in Kyrgyzstan as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're in the northern part of the country, far removed from this fighting. But 75,000 people on the other side of the planet, most Americans aren't going to sit up and take notice. But when you consider that, according to the grand masters of this geopolitical chess match, guys like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who look at Central Asia as the key to controlling the world island, which is Asia and Europe. Control Central Asia and you control the world island. This conflict could be a lot more significant than it looks.
Well, I think you're absolutely right on that. And I think one reason that many of our listeners maybe haven't really been paying attention to the stands. In fact, it's one of the categories of PID News, mm-hmm. the stands. The reason is because our cable news outlets don't really mention it at all, and that's what we depend upon. BBC News, AFP over in France, the German press, they pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Because they're a lot closer to it, and I think they also recognize that as the relationship between Russia and, well, their relationships with Russia go, so go mm-hmm. they. And that is why we're bringing this up. Fires set by rioters have destroyed most of the city of Osh, which is the second largest city in Kyrgyzstan.
Well, this was precipitated by the government failing.
Right. And the new or the interim president, Roza Otunbayeva, blamed the former president, Kurmanbek Bakayev, for this trouble. They claim that supporters of Bakayev have attacked both ethnic Kyrgyz and Uzbeks in order to get them fighting with one another.
You know, there is a lot of fighting going on in countries abroad. Over here, we're not. I mean, we fight, you know, as far as, okay, I'm going to tell you my political opinion. Now you can tell me yours, and I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of fighting. But over there, they're literally fighting a war in many of the countries. And one of them is right now is Thailand.
Yeah.
And it was a similar thing. In Thailand, there was essentially a change of government. And it's the yellows versus the reds.
Who took the really bizarre step of having their blood drained so they could essentially make hemoglobin balloons that they tossed in protest at government offices, you know, basically splashing them with their own blood, which is
That awful?
Yeah.
You know, where I go to get my nails done when I do get them done, the wonderful young lady who does my nails is from Thailand. And I was asking her about the civil war that's going on over there. And she looked at me in such surprise and she said, you mean you've heard of it?
Most Americans don't know and don't care. Yeah. We're too busy arguing with one another over whether Barack Obama is, over him and his policies or and how well they're doing with trying to contain and control the spill in the Gulf of Mexico, which we'll get to in a few minutes. But yeah,
And before we go any further, I do want to say really quickly that if you are listening to this and you are Uzbek, please understand that we care about you. Every person on this earth is loved by Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ died, for every one of you, every one of us. And we are merely, you know, Second City TV was a comedy outfit, much like Saturday Night Live, and they had a sketch on there that was essentially, you know, all of these Uzbek references, because Russia apparently has a real problem with Uzbek, and they were parodying a Russian television station.
Exactly. And so the point of the audio clip that we took was taken from the perspective of a parody of Russian television.
And the reason we chose it is because here is Kyrgyzstan asking Russia to come in. And I think one of the reasons they're asking them to is not only because they're with their governmental problems, they're maybe having a little trouble taking care of it right now. But more than that, I mean, the Uzbeks are on the run. And they want Russia to come in and what, chase them so that more of them leave?
Well, apparently. The way the situation's breaking down, according to news reports out of the region, is that the Uzbek government backs the interim government that replaced the former president, Kurmanbek Bakayev, who is now in exile in Belarus. The Kyrgyz in the southern part of Kyrgyzstan, which is where this rioting is taking place, are supporters of Bakayev. So they believe that Uzbekistan was behind the revolution, essentially, that toppled the government of Bakayev. And now they're chasing the Uzbeks out of the country. This is similar, it seems to me, at least in a broad sense, similar to what was happening in Kosovo with ethnic Albanians.
Well, and I think we've also seen it happen in the last couple of years in Georgia. Things are moving along ethnic lines. It's been happening in Turkey for, gosh, decades.
Yeah.
Regarding the Armenians and also the Kurds.
This is a topic that researcher Dave Emery has done a lot on. Not this conflict specifically, but the Earth Island and the geopolitical machinations for control of the Earth Island, and the importance, the role played by people of Turkic descent. The Uzbeks are essentially one of the Turkish peoples, and there are, I mean, you look at a map and see how the various ethnic Turks have spread out across Europe. It's not just in Turkey. They're spread all the way over into Western China, Xinjiang province, which is predominantly Uyghur. And the Uyghurs are essentially ethnic Turks. They're Muslim. They are not ethnic Han, which is Chinese. And you can find the same concentrations of Turkish peoples in Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and elsewhere. Now, as Westerners, we're so wrapped up in our own ethnic divides you know, Anglo and African American, Mexican American, Latino, Hispanic, however you want to define that we just don't understand or pay attention to these conflicts, and they're taking place all over the globe. So this is what's happening in southern Kyrgyzstan, where the Kyrgs, who are a minority in this area, have essentially destroyed the second largest city in their country in order to chase the Uzbeks out. And according to news reports, again, the 75,000 people who've been chased across the border into Uzbekistan are essentially elderly people, women and children, because the men apparently are dead, because many of these refugees have gunshot wounds. So this is
horrible.
This is really horrible. And the Kyrgs are asking for Russian intervention. Again, the interim government replaced the president in exile, who's now in Belarus. His replacement is supported by the Uzbek government. So this a really significant development in an area of the world that is more geopolitically important than most Americans understand.
Well, while we are on the subject of Turkey and wars and rumors of wars. You just recently talked to L.A. Marzulli. I haven't listened to that interview yet. Sorry about that. If you have not, you know, you want to make sure that you go to VFTB.net and check out the shows that Derek has been doing lately. He's live on Friday night, and he is, of course, putting up the podcast shows, the interviews that are taped in advance every Sunday evening. But you talked with Lynn Marzulli, and he's written a piece about the Ezekiel 38-39 war and how it may relate to what's going on with the Gaza Strip and the flotilla that
the
went
flotilla.
There. Yeah, exactly. Can you, want to tell me about that a little bit?
Well, we got into it just a little bit and just pointed out the significance of the event, because to this point, even though a lot of many prophecy scholars have identified some of the players in the Ezekiel 38-39 war, that's the Gog-Magog war, as being from Turkey. I mean, the principal players, there's some disagreement over the analysis. Is Magog really Russia? Is Gomer Germany?
Well, I think regardless, Turkey is involved.
But some of the other nations like Togarma and Tubal and Meshek are identified with people groups that settled south of the Black Sea in what is now Turkey. So until this point, Israel and Turkey have been cooperating. They've been conducting joint military exercises, which Israel doesn't do with any other Arab nation, really. Egypt, some lately. In fact, the blockade of the Gaza Strip is a joint venture of Israel and Egypt. It's not just the Israelis. The Egyptians are also participating in this blockade. So, but until this point, you really didn't see a plausible way of luring Turkey into a war against Israel. And now suddenly you've got the Prime Minister Erdogan of Turkey saying that he's going to accompany the next flotilla because they wouldn't dare intercept a vessel with a head of state on board.
Well,
this is a game of chicken that could really turn very ugly.
Yeah.
So, and in the weeks ahead, I'm going to interview Douglas Berner next week, who was recommended to us by David W. Lowe and Peter Goodgame some time back. He's written a book a couple of years ago now called The Silence is Broken, God Hooks Gog and Magog. So that will be
the hook in the jaw.
Yes, that will be next Sunday's View from the Bunker podcast. Also next week, I still need to confirm, but hope to interview Bill Salas, the author of Israelistan. So we'll be doing some prophecy interviews over the next few weeks just because it seemed timely.
Well, I'm guessing that just about everybody who's listening to this has already read Ezekiel 38 and 39, and you're very familiar with the Gog-Magog war that we're talking about. But if you have never read it, I highly recommend that you do that. In fact, I'd say start about Ezekiel 35 and read through 39, 40, somewhere in there, so you get a good background on what we're talking about before Derek speaks with these people, because you want to have that footing so you can really hear the remarks of prophecy scholars as to what's going on geopolitically right now.
Yeah, it really is a significant time. Again, regardless of when you place the Gog-Magog war in history, there are some who place it at the beginning of the seven-year period of tribulation. Mike Heiser puts it at the end of the 1,000 years.
I think it's both.
And he suggests that may be the case, that there is an already but not yet fulfillment of prophecy, as we often see in prophecy. So there, you know, regardless of that, we see now finally a plausible scenario by which Turkey might participate in a war against Israel. So,
and isn't it interesting that in the Book of Revelation that the seven churches are all in Turkey?
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about that, and I've got lots of reading to do. I need to close the laptop and go to the e-book reader because.
You can't play Farmville if you close your laptop.
That's true. I know. Well, speaking of prophetic things, we've talked a little bit about the prophetic implications of the leak from the Deepwater Horizon well in the Gulf of Mexico. There are so many pictures, and I'm sure you've seen them online or on the news, where that oil looks red.
It looks like blood is coming up from the seafloor. It is just the most, and the videos are even worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see photographs and think, okay, well, someone has enhanced this, someone's done something to this. But when you see even live video shots that are, you know, CNN is doing wonderful work. I have to say, I don't often watch CNN, but I noticed Fox News was barely covering the story, mm-hmm. and they didn't seem to even have people down there. Shepard Smith was about the only one who was really mad about it. So I went over to CNN, and they're just about wall-to-wall coverage down there. They've got every one of their main guys and gals mm-hmm. on scene.
And I have to say, just from a personal standpoint, that I really like the fact that they're giving bigger roles and more responsibility to John King and Candy Crowley.
Oh, I love Candy Crowley.
Yeah. And you know, not just because she's a great reporter, which I think she is, and you know, I've come to respect John King. I used to think, well, he's a wild-eyed liberal.
No, I think he's more liberal than conservative, but you know what? He's fair.
But he is fair. I've come to believe that. And I like Candy Crowley because she looks like a real person. My goodness.
I'm so tired of Barbie and Ken giving the news.
Exactly. I mean, look, you get a 26-year-old who maybe just wasn't quite pretty enough to make it as a professional runway model and put her out there as an analyst on the news. I should believe this person. Why? Come on. So, no, it's just a personal observation there.
I know.
And we need more curmudgeons like the fella on you know, Wolf Blitzer's show, which is Jack Cafferty.
Yeah.
Curmudgeons. And I do miss Lou Dobbs. So.
You know, whatever happened to him? Where did he go?
He's still doing his radio show?
Or?
I believe still doing his radio program, and he's considering a political run. I don't agree with him on everything, but.
Oh, I hope he doesn't do that.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, more curmudgeons in the news would certainly, I'd spend more time watching.
Well, back to the Gulf of Mexico. Those photos.
And the FAA. There won't be as many of those photos coming out in the weeks ahead.
That is correct.
The FAA has declared the Gulf of Mexico, the entire spill zone, as a no-fly zone.
And the bigger the spill zone gets, the more the no-fly zone expands.
That's right. And I quote from the notice. This is called NOTAM, which is a notice to... Notice to Airmen or Notice to Air... Anyway, it's an FAA acronym, which basically means pay attention to this. All aircraft operations are prohibited except those flights authorized by ATC, which is the cleanup command. And I was right. It is Notice to Airmen, NOTAM. Routine flights supporting offshore oil operations, federal, state, local, and military flight operations supporting oil spill recovery and reconstitution efforts, and air medical and law enforcement operations. In other words, if it's not related to the government's response to the spill, you can't fly there.
And that means CNN helicopter? No, you may not fly over and get video. What are they hiding?
Well, I hate to speculate because, I mean, when we do speculate, we try to label it as such.
Let me just repeat something that I said to you a few days ago. Was watching Anderson Cooper's show. Not crazy about Anderson Cooper, but mm-hmm. again, at least these people are on scene. And he was speaking with one of the CNN, on the job guys, one of their actual reporters who had a video camera, a man, mm-hmm. and he was going around and trying to speak to the various groups that were assisting in the cleanup. We're talking about people who are working ostensibly for BP. And a memo had come down that morning that CNN was given a copy of from BP. And the memo from BP said, you know, we have told all of our employees that they are free to speak with whomever they wish, whether that's a newsman or a person on the street, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, but essentially these people are free to talk. Am I?
You're fine.
You're looking up over your computer there, just sort of peering at me.
And without the light on, it's peering into the darkness, yes.
Yes. Well, anyway, good one, honey. This reporter had gone to these groups, and one after another, they showed him. And he said he spoke to about 24 groups, one after another. Can you tell me what's going on here? Nope, we're not supposed to talk to you. Well, who told you can't talk to us? I can't tell you. Well, who do you work for? I can't tell you that.
Kaiser Soze.
Yes. It does sound like it's Kaiser Soze. He went to all of these different groups. He also, this same gentleman, went over to the area where the rescuers were helping out the wildlife, the various birds and animal life from the sea who had needed to be cleaned up from the oil spill. And they wanted to just videotape and maybe take some still photos, but to, interview the people who were helping out. I mean, this is a great humanitarian story.
Mm-hmm.
There were military guards keeping them from going in. Mm-hmm. They were told they were not allowed in because it would stress out the animals.
Hmm.
Yeah.
As if being coated in crude wasn't bad enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, what are they hiding?
Well, there's some stories that came out over this past week that indicate that things are worse in the Gulf than we're being told. There's some analysts who've been looking at this and trying to piece together from the fragments of information that come out from interviews with the incident command led by retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen and others. Statements made in front of Congress by representatives of BP and Halliburton and Transocean, the actual drilling team, Transocean, the guys who actually were on the rig when it exploded. And there's a growing body of evidence that suggests that there's damage to the well below the seafloor, which means, in a nutshell, that this is going to be near impossible to cap by any means.
I read that story and I looked at the video, and it does look like the wellhead itself is tilting,
which would indicate that the floor is being compromised. The wellhead itself, the blowout preventer that is sitting on top of the seafloor. I mean, the seafloor at that level is soft mud.
Mm-hmm.
It's not intended to hold or to support a 450-ton device, which is what the blowout preventer is.
Right.
I mean, that's 900,000 pounds. That's a lot of steel.
Mm-hmm.
The blowout preventer essentially is not intended to balance on top of the drill casing, which is pipe, just steel pipe, which extends, and this was astounding to me. I mean, they're 5,000 feet below the sea, but the actual pocket of oil is another 1,800 feet below that. So, you're looking at a mile and a half below the surface of the ocean. That's how far down that pipe is extending. The blowout preventer sort of sits on the seafloor, but it's propped up there with cement that essentially spreads the weight out on the floor of the ocean.
But the cement is failing.
Yeah, the cement failed, and there were other things that failed in that allowed the gases to escape up to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go into the technical aspects of it because we could spend the rest of the show on that. The bottom line, though, is if the well is compromised below the surface, they can plug that pipe all they want to, but if the pipe is busted, which it appears to be,
mm-hmm,
it's going to leak out anyway.
Well, exactly. What I read was that it's very possible that the pipe, as you say, underneath the wellhead,
mm-hmm,
that's in the seabed itself is compromised.
Right.
And the entire process has somehow fractured the seabed so that there are fine cracks. Mm-hmm. You might think of it that way. And there are leaks coming up from all over the place, not just at that point, but, miles away.
Yeah. And in a nutshell, there was a fellow interviewed on MSNBC earlier this week, a fellow named Matt Simmons, who's a longtime oil industry executive and an expert, considered an expert in the industry, who basically said At this point, there are two options. Since everything else has failed, and since it appears that the well itself is compromised so that you cannot plug it below the surface because you can't get the material down there to plug what is essentially a leaky straw, you can either wait until this bleeds out, until the oil basically is...
Which could take decades.
Dry, which he said could take 30 years and poison not just the Gulf of Mexico, but the entire Atlantic Ocean. Or you can use the Russian option, which is this, which is the tactic that the Russians used several times to cap blowouts on land back in the 70s and 80s, which is to drop a nuke down the hole.
Exactly. On land in deserted areas where you're not going to affect people and wildlife.
Mm-hmm. And you don't face the technical challenge of how to get the nuke down 5,000 feet below the surface of the ocean.
You know, there is talk that the United States is speaking off the record to Russian scientists and to the Russian government and trying to not only get their expertise on the nuke option, but also apparently Russia has some subs that can go that manned subs that can go that deep. Let's not forget, the manned subs that Russia has had in the past, they've had to be rescued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is like something from a thriller, you know, a Hollywood-type thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you can just picture now Harrison Ford leading a crew in a submarine down a mile below the surface in order to perform this, or Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a terrestrial Armageddon type event.
And
by Armageddon, I mean the movie, not the real definition of Armageddon.
Exactly.
You know, the battle in the Valley of Megiddo. But this is really as bad as it gets, according to these experts. And that could explain why reporters and cameras are being kept away. Again, that's speculation on our part. We don't know that for a fact, but that could explain it.
So that blood red Gulf of Mexico could become a blood red Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just an ugly, ugly thought. I mean,
you know, it's not just the color; it's killing off the fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the Gulf, at that position in the Gulf, there are it's known that there are sperm whales another type of whale, but sperm whales in particular, which are considered endangered, that habitat, that area, that region of the Gulf.
They are, and it isn't just the oil. My understanding is that just having that essentially toxic mm-hmm. waste in the Gulf of Mexico will eventually change the oxygen level in the water such that the plankton mm-hmm. will die. The entire life cycle of the ocean depends on plankton.
And then, of course, we're just coming into hurricane season, which creates a whole, you know, that's a wild card. We don't know how that will affect things. This is a disaster of biblical proportions.
It really is. And when Barack Obama, you know, has a couple of concerts and a couple of vacations when he should be, you know, kicking butt, as he says, he did use the word butt.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, I don't know what kind of butt he can kick at this point. I think once that well failed.
Well, let me make a suggestion. It is coming out, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
that in the first quarter of this year, this was prior to the April 20th. April 20, people,
mm-hmm.
remember that date?
Hitler's birthday?
Yep. Prior to the Deepwater Horizon's explosion that killed 11 men, that during the first quarter, Goldman Sachs, the UBS Bank, and other high-profile international financial institutions divested themselves of BP stock.
Mm-hmm.
Big time.
Yeah, not all of it, but it was the largest part of their holdings in BP stock.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as if they knew what was coming.
Yeah. Now, you can't tie it to like a day or two before the event. It was in the first quarter.
It was in the first quarter. Here's the other thing that's really interesting, and that is that Dick Cheney's company, Halliburton,
mm-hmm.
well, they bought Boot and Coot, which is a company that is helping with the cleanup. And they bought them just prior to April 20th. I think the date they bought them was something like April 12th.
Well, that is really interesting. Boot and Coot's International Well Control. now owned by Halliburton. Well, so Halliburton participated in the the injection of the
they
the,
did
the it drilling was, cement.
They're concrete. They're cement. Yeah. Yes, indeed. You know, I want to talk about those men who died on the Deepwater Horizon. A CNN interview, and I tell you what, if you really want to see what's going on, watch that channel. They're covering it.
Mm-hmm.
They had an interview with the survivors. And these men have not only gone through physical hell, but they're going through, you know, survivor guilt hell.
Mm-hmm.
As they think about their comrades who died on that rig. One gentleman was discussing how they knew something was about to happen. He was in a control room at the time, and he said he could hear the hiss of the gas that was coming up.
Deafening, he said.
He said it was roaring. In fact, when the fireball went up, he said the fire was so big, it was like it was alive. He said you could hear it roaring. And that gave me chills because, mm-hmm. you know, we all, you know, in prophecy talk about the things that may be under the earth, whether or not demonic hordes, are they literally in the earth? When it talks about the angel who comes down with the key to the bottomless pit mm-hmm. and opens it up, and this smoke comes out like a furnace, and it's these locust-like creatures who are demonic. You think about piercing the earth in the Gulf of Mexico and the what looks like blood coming up, and it begins with this fireball
mm-hmm.
that comes up, hissing and roaring.
It's... Yeah, again, it's an apocalyptic
it is.
Image. And
it gave me chills when I was watching that, when he said that.
Yeah, it's boy, you know, and those 11 men sacrificed on the anniversary of Hitler's birth, and according to some critics anyway, who argue that shortcuts taken in the casing plan or design by British Petroleum, and I'm certainly no expert, but just reporting what we've read, that there are those who have raised serious questions about the casing design, which may have been altered in order to pursue a less expensive option. The drilling rig was already several weeks past due, and BP was renting the rig for $533,000 a day, so they were about $21 million over budget on the drilling of this well. They wanted mm-hmm. to get this Deepwater Horizon rig off the well so they could put the platform on top and begin pumping operations.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Deepwater Horizon was supposed to move on to another site and begin drilling.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to push this through, get it done, get the rig in place and begin, or get the well in place and begin operating. He said this was not an operating well. This was still in the drilling phase. But the date, as you point out, Hitler's birthday, the anniversary of the Columbine Massacre, and a number of other things that have taken place over the years. Mm-hmm. Is there some spiritual significance there? Don't know. What is it about 420 that leads to, you know, things like this that happen? And here's another interesting connection to figure, a political angle to this, as we hear the faux anger coming from Washington, D.C. about our president who's going to kick some butt. His chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, who harbors the goal of becoming mayor of Chicago someday when the current mayor, Daley, finally moves on, it's come out.
It'll just be another Daley that moves in there. I don't know why he thinks he could get it.
Yeah, I don't know if Richard M. has sons with political aspirations.
Cousins?
I don't know. I just got a brother, Bill Daley, who was in the Clinton administration.
Won't you come home, Bill Daley?
Rahm Emanuel, who is from the Chicago area.
Sam liked it.
He's snoring.
Oh, no, that's laughter.
Oh, okay. I don't speak dachshund as well as you do. Rahm Emanuel, while he was served in Congress, lived for 5 years rent-free in an apartment in Washington, D.C. We've talked about special deals for congressmen before, mm-hmm. but generally in the context of the family in Washington, D.C., and their special deals for congressmen who hold a dominionist worldview. Rahm Emanuel was living in an apartment owned by Democratic Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut and her husband, Stanley Greenberg. Now, here's the links. Greenberg works for a consulting firm, which was a principal architect of the rebranding of British Petroleum into BP. Again, it's what BP stands for, British Petroleum, but they rebranded it through the series of green and yellow ads and the nice little cartoony figures and plants growing everywhere into Beyond Petroleum. Greenberg is, interestingly, also tied to an outfit called GCS, which is named for the last initials of Stanley Greenberg, Bob Shrum, who was John Kerry's campaign manager, and James Carville. We're dying down here.
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding.
Right. And so Greenberg and Congresswoman DeLauro owned the apartment in which Rahm Emanuel lived. Greenberg's consultancy firm
helped to rebrand.
Helped to rebrand BP. So according to this, just an interesting little political thread there that you might keep in mind when you hear the president talking about kicking some butt. His number one advisor, his chief of staff, basically lived in D.C. for 5 years free, courtesy of someone who was taking in lots of money from BP.
Oh, my. These little groups that get together. Hey, speaking of little group that gets together, the Trilateral Commission, they just inducted somebody new.
Yeah, and this is really interesting. I'd be really interested to hear Constance Cumby's analysis of this development, because she's been keeping an eye on this guy for a long time. The Trilateral Commission, and I recommend you to the research of Patrick Wood of the August Review, and you'll find it at theaugustreview.com. He's been tracking the trilaterals for years. In fact, wrote, co-authored the book, The Trilaterals Over Washington. The influence of the trilaterals is greater than that of the Council on Foreign Relations, and at least as far as American foreign policy goes, it's more significant than the Bilderberg Group or the CFR. In fact, Patrick just he produces a series of videos that you can find on YouTube, and his most recent one was about who wields more power, the CFR or the Trilateral Commission. And he argues that because of its exclusive membership, you know, invitation only, and really restricted to just a few hundred members, the Trilateral Commission is far more powerful than the CFR. Their one of their newest members, from Spain is Javier Solana.
Come on down, Javier Solana, yay!
Yes, Solana is, there were four new representatives from Spain. This is from a news report from Barcelona just a couple of days ago. And it's in Spanish now, so I can't read it. But essentially, Solana, who was the representative of the EU, the foreign policy chief for the EU until recently, and who's been identified by Constance Cumby for years as a potential candidate for the Antichrist. Excuse me.
Bless you.
Solana,
are you allergic to Javier Solana?
I'm not sure. It could be a psychological thing. So every time I hear, slowly I turn.
Have you tried Javier Solana light?
A third less than the...
Yeah.
So anyway, Solana is now, has moved on from his position in the EU to a member of the very powerful Trilateral Commission.
You know, when the Four Horsemen were down supposedly brokering peace in Israel,
the quartet.
The quartet. I always think of them as the Four Horsemen. I believe Javier Solana was there. He was just an extra, but he was there. And I think every time they meet, he is there.
And Solana was...
His first name, by the way, in case you're not aware, means savior.
Javier, yeah. He was also at the Bilderberg Group meeting last weekend. Or was it 2 weekends ago?
Last weekend.
Which is just outside Barcelona. So it's interesting. The timing was, you know, you had the Bilderberg Group meet just outside Barcelona last weekend. And then on Wednesday of this week, the 9th, they announced that Solana and three other Spaniards would represent Spain in the Trilateral Commission, which trilateral because it basically represents North America, Europe, and Japan. So. But Solana was one of the Bilderbergers this year, representing the international community as the former Secretary General of the European Union. There were actually a couple of other...
Was there a swimsuit competition? I hope not.
Considering some of the age of some of the people there. I mean,
you don't want to think.
No. You know, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, and that's where I was thinking 2 weeks ago, because we had gotten a preliminary list of the attendees of this year's Bilderberg Group meeting.
That's true.
And there were some that weren't on that list who actually did attend. I'd mentioned that I didn't see Henry Kissinger's name on the list, and there's actually a photo of Kissinger at the resort. So Kissinger did make it after all. But a couple of others that I thought are really significant, Bill Gates of Microsoft was there, and he was talking about the research that they've been doing into nanotechnology and nanotech. What's the word? They call them jabs in the EU, in the UK, rather.
Vaccines?
Vaccines, right. Nanotech vaccines.
Why? That's the Armageddon strain.
Yes. That's the basic technology behind Sharon's novel, The Armageddon Strain.
That I wrote back in the spring of 2004.
Wow, it was prophetic.
Well, clearly I had just, you know, jumped into the future.
So essentially they're talking about a way to use nanotechnology to put something on your skin that will essentially go into your body and then release whatever it is these little nanites contain.
Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with the jabs, so to speak, in my book.
Yes. Which then you graciously let me steal for the God conspiracy. The irony of all this is that Gates, along with other philanthropists like Mayor Bloomberg of New York and Warren Buffett and Oprah Winfrey, oddly enough, got together several months ago in a loose group called the Good Club to talk about how to control population in the third world. So you got Gates, who's spending his own money to research these nanotech vaccines, on the one hand, trying to save the lives of a bunch of people, and on the other hand, looking at ways to try to prevent lots of them from being born, or to kill them before they're born, through, you know, medical services, women's health services, you know, all the different euphemisms that they employ to mean
abortion
on demand. So it's really kind of a bizarre thing and kind of creepy when you think about it, because he's also financing that seed bank, that global seed bank there in Svalbard Island in Norway or whatever, you know, so that
he's got a rude awakening coming.
Things literally
Jesus
go to hell.
Christ is going to come back and he is going to kick butt.
Yeah. There's going to be might be a paddling.
Oh, it's more like a kicking.
So anyway, that was Gates's talk at the according to reports from the Bilderberg Group meeting. We mentioned Henry Kissinger. Who else was there that I wanted to mention? Oh, Eric Schmidt, the chairman of Google.
Google is an interesting program, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They're worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
They have been accused by China of spying.
Mm-hmm.
They've been accused by Europe of spying because of Google Maps.
Mm-hmm. And they've been accused by the West of collaborating with China in its...
spying.
Well, not spying, but in its censorship of sites that the Chinese government didn't want its people to see.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, some really interesting... some really interesting things taking place there as you get the companies principally responsible for tying together the internet, making it possible for us to exchange information, getting together and meeting off the record with these wealthy and powerful government and business leaders at the Bilderberg Group conclave outside Barcelona this past year. Also at that meeting that I didn't note before, besides Javier Solana, Larry Summers, who's one of...
We just like saying the name, Javier Solana.
Yeah, it sounds like a really fancy, you know, sport coupe or something. You know, the 2010 Javier Solana. The Queen of Spain was in attendance, which makes sense. Again, a number of members of the Royal Houses of Europe. Queen Beatrix of Holland is always there for some reason.
She'll be there when she's a head in a jar.
Yeah. The chairman of Goldman Sachs, Peter Sutherland. A number of other, you know, big investment bankers and so forth.
Question is, are there any supposedly unknown U.S. politicians who attended?
Well, I didn't see any who looked
like
really...
Sarah Palin. I know she's not unknown, but was she there?
No, not according to the list
I've got. Okay, well, she's apparently not going to win the next election then.
No. Looking at just very quickly here. Why is author Bing West, F.J. Bing West, of the USA there? I don't even know who that is, but that's a name that just kind of jumps out as...
Great name. Bing!
Well, yeah. West. I mean, this list, you've got all of these, you know, long and impressive titles like executive director and deputy secretary and president. And then you've got this one, this author. Charlie Rose, the guy who hosts the talk show on PBS, he's there.
Well, I think they usually have one or two media people.
Sworn to
and,
secrecy.
And in fact, they sometimes have entertainers
mm-hmm.
there.
Editor-in-chief of The Economist, John Micklethwaite.
Lady Gaga was there?
I doubt it. She would have been pretty... She's a little... not quite low-key enough for the Bilderberg Group. Anyway, I thought it was significant. You saw the chairman of Google and the CEO of Microsoft in attendance at the Bilderberg Group meeting.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this before. The internet is a wonderful way that you and I can connect and talk about essentially what's going on in the world from a biblical worldview. We're able to do what we do because of the internet. But the internet really, in many ways, is, you know, behind enemy lines because it is part of the prince and power of the air. It's mm-hmm. the enemy's domain.
Yep.
So why should we be surprised that those who are heavily involved in the software behind it and the infrastructure behind it maybe aren't on the side of Jesus Christ?
Mm. Yeah, planet Earth is definitely occupied territory.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's coming to come back and, you know, kick butt. And speaking of...
There's a big sign on Earth, Occupado.
That's appropriate. That's appropriate. Speaking of Solana and the EU and Spain, and, you know, circling back now to, as we often do on this broadcast...
We eventually get back to it,
a linear
don't we?
Flow. It's, no. Yeah, kind of meanders.
It's organic.
Yes, yes. And
which means it's healthy.
99% evil free. Spanish are seeking allies or support for a plan in the EU to lift the blockade of Gaza. And this came out after the Bilderberg Group meeting in Spain and the elevation of Javier Solana to the Trilateral Commission. Now, that may just be coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a coincidence theorist. But maybe not. Maybe the timing of this was all is significant. And going into the Bilderberg Group meeting, we were told that the principal items on the agenda were the global economic meltdown, what to do about Iran, and probably, because this happened so close to the timing of the Bilderberg Group meeting, what to do about the conflict between Israel and the blockade of Gaza and the Turks.
Well, you're right. I think the timing is extremely important. And Lynn Marzulli brings this out in his article that about a year ago, King Abdullah of Jordan made a statement that if there were not a permanent peace brokered in Israel, in other words, if somehow the Palestinian state, a real Palestinian state, could not exist peacefully by an Israeli state within 1 year, that war would break out.
Mm-hmm.
Real war. And a year has passed. It's been about a year.
And we're looking at some serious things developing there, not just over the Gaza Strip, but over Iran. Saudi Arabia, it was reported this week by The Telegraph in the UK, has authorized Israel to use Saudi airspace for a bombing raid on Iran's nuclear facilities. I'm sorry, this is the London Times.
Mm-hmm.
And this follows the United Nations already implementing another round of sanctions on Iran. You know, big whoop for all the good they've done. But it's important to remember that not every state in the Gulf, not every Arab state in the Gulf supports, or rather I should say Muslim state, because the Iranians are not Arabs. Not every Muslim state in the Gulf is on the side of Iran in this conflict. The Saudis, which is a Sunni nation, are not happy with the Iranians possibly possessing nuclear weapons.
No. You know, another thing to remember is because of the piracy in the Aden area, not Aden, in the, oh gosh, the, oh, I'm sorry, I'm just...
The Straits of Oman?
Yes, thank you. Yes. In that area around Chad and...
Somalia.
Somalia, thank you very much. Sorry, brain is just not finding it. I'm going back to Javier Solana. That's the word that I know and I can say. Because of that, the Iranian Navy has been there for a while, for about a year, and there are other countries that have ships there that are to guard their big vessels as they go through those straits to make sure that they're not attacked by these pirates.
Mm-hmm.
Iran has gone on record as saying they will protect the any shipments coming through that blockade. And you better bet they've got subs there now.
Hmm. And so do we.
And they may be nuclear capable.
Yeah.
Iran, you know, they're not going to come out and say, oh, hey, we got it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all part and parcel of war. I mean, when you're weak, you feign strength, and when you're strong, you pretend to be weak.
Mm-hmm.
But according to sources cited in the article by the Times, including U.S. Defense Department and State Department sources, the Saudis have cleared all this with the State Department. They have done tests to make sure that their jets won't scramble when the Israelis fly over. And
that'll be about the time that the Kaitla volcano goes off.
Yeah, and the Cubs win the World Series. So... it will, yeah. You know, I say that tongue in cheek, and this is a serious topic, so forgive me for that snarky remark. It is.
They mind.
Not this year. It is a difficult situation in the Middle East, and that's why we're going to spend a few interviews now on the View from the Bunker podcast, especially on the topic of prophecy. We're at about 50 minutes now.
Oh yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, with the. Monitor turned this way. Sharon has no idea where we are on the clock.
I usually am able to see exactly where it is. I should just keep an eye on Sam.
Yeah, because in about 5 minutes, he will stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Just one final note, and this relates to the podcast interview on View from the Bunker this weekend, which is Sarah Leslie of Discernment Ministries coming back to discuss an article, a column written by Janet Porter of Faith to Action in WorldNet Daily this past week. And... without trying to return in kind, let's just say that the article, the column by Janet Porter, essentially calls Christians who do not endorse dominion theology. In fact, she denies that she holds dominion theology, but that Christians who don't support dominion theology are essentially Nazi collaborators.
She likens
them to Nazi collaborators, communist collaborators, and that we need to come out of the closet and start reading the Bible.
It's
a hit piece.
It is a hit piece, and it is just vitriolic. She's just throwing acid constantly.
Yeah.
But you know what? The best thing to do is just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And when she says she's not a dominionist, she may really be, you know, hey, we're not calling ourselves that anymore.
Yeah.
We've moved on to another buzzword, and you're going to have to find out what it is.
It could be. And, the claim is that we don't want to establish a theocracy, but the point is this. If we seek political solutions to the moral decay of the United States, the only way to enforce it through legislation is to establish a theocracy or a theonomy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it any other way.
And that is exactly what's going to happen. Jesus Christ will indeed be King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and he is going to reign over this earth.
Mm-hmm. But until that day, we are to make disciples of all nations. And if we want to change our society
and
our culture...
And that means one person at a time.
Exactly right. If we want to change our society and our culture, we have to do it by witnessing to friends and neighbors and knowing why we believe what we believe. And I really think that apologetics is an area that so many of us are weak on, that it would do all of us good to go back and learn more about how we have the Bible that we have today.
And you can do that now online.
Yes. Yes. This is really exciting. Got an email from Dr. Michael Heiser earlier in the week. And he's launching a couple of learning institutes online that will help us do this. And we're like kids in a candy store right now.
I am. I'm looking at the outline of the courses that are being offered, and I'm thinking, I want to take them all.
Right. He's kicking off, and we'll tell you about this one first, because I think from the standpoint of the faith, this is one that's really key. This is foundational stuff. The MEMRA Institute for Biblical and Ancient Studies. Now, MEMRA, I thought, was an acronym for something, so I had to look it up. It's actually the Aramaic word for the word, or logos.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So the Memra Institute for Biblical and Ancient Studies, you can study online from Dr. Michael Heiser and Dr. Judd Burton and Dr. Cisneros, and I'm forgetting his first name. I wanted to say Henry Cisneros, but he was a former Secretary of Transportation. I don't think that's the guy. But anyway, but forgive me, Dr. Cisneros. Johnny Cisneros, there we go. We'll teach these courses online in Old Testament, New Testament, Biblical theology, ancient history, ancient languages, if you've ever had a hankering to learn Hebrew or Akkadian.
But they also have Ugaritic. A Paranormal Institute.
They've also launched the, I'm going to get this wrong, it's the IPPPS, Institute of Paranormal, Preternatural, and Parapsychological Studies. Ha!
That's alliteration for you there, buddy.
And these courses will begin in October. They will run through the year, and they're offering discounts on pre-registration, which lasts through September. And I'll put links to both of those online institutes in the show notes at PIDradio.com.
But here's the caveat. Do not wait. Just because you hear us say you get the discount through September, don't wait, because they're only going to take so many people.
Right. So that it's not about volume. I mean, once there's a certain number in a class, they're not going to continue to take people more than they can handle.
I mean, these men only have so much time in their days.
Exactly. I wonder how Mike has time to do anything like this.
I have no idea. All I know is I got to sign up before I'm bumped out.
Yeah. The Paranormal Studies Institute is broken down into the Division of UFO Studies. UFOs, science and technology, the alien abduction phenomenon, God, man, and extraterrestrials, and then the Division of Preternatural Studies, where you can learn about vampirism, lycanthropology, the study of werewolves, giants, demons, the occult, witchcraft, religions, and mythology. It is fascinating stuff. I would suggest are probably the advanced courses if you've already got a firm grounding in biblical theology.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think that sounds like candy, so to speak, as far as, you know, the studying. That sounds like the fun stuff, you might say.
Yeah.
But really, you need to get the other stuff. And don't think of that, you know, the Old Testament, you know, introduction, that that's going to be dry. It's not. I'll bet you that sort of foundational stuff is the meat and potatoes.
Mm-hmm. So links to that in the show notes at PIDradio.com, and encourage you to take advantage of this, because I suspect that the worldview, if you've listened to any of the interviews that we've done or that these gentlemen have done elsewhere, Dr. Michael Heiser and Dr. Judd Burton, they're bringing a rather unique perspective to biblical studies. It's grounded in Scripture and grounded in the original languages on which Scripture is, in which it was written. So they're not leaping to conclusions that aren't supported by the Bible here.
Right.
But you don't find many Bible scholars who are willing to say, yeah, UFOs are real. Yeah, giants are real. Yeah, there are other... Sam is
moving.
I
told you.
55 minutes.
Yeah.
He's dead on. German engineering. So this is a really unique opportunity. Was going to talk a little bit about the Route 52 initiative of Cindy Jacobs.
You need to make that fast, because we need to.
I don't want to get into that.
We'll talk about that next time.
Yeah. Because we want to thank the folks who've taken the time to call and ask questions and leave messages at our 24/7 voicemail line, which is country code 1-317-489-9350.
We had one great call coming from a gentleman in Florida who lives close to the airport, that Reynolds Airport that we were talking about.
Yeah, Mark down there. It's south of Jacksonville. It's the Reynolds Airstrip. And you remember we told you last week about those white vans.
Yeah, the photos that make it, you know, it certainly look like a whole bunch of white vans parked there on the runways.
Yeah. He went over there. He said it's not blocked off with fences or anything, security, you know, no security or anything like that. But all the vans are gone. They're not there. And they, for all we know, they've been gone for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we honestly don't know. All we know is what we saw.
Mm-hmm. So he went over there and confirmed that those vans are not there.
Yeah, and thank you so much for doing that. And I'm betting that many of you live locally. You know, if the stories that we talk about, if you live in the area, you know, internationally, if you're in a country, if you're in Uzbek, please call us and let us know exactly what's going on. We also got a call from a gal who lives in Colorado.
Jeanette said that she was referred to us by Larry Taylor, who is a committed watchman on the wall. And
love
we get his updates via email all the time on news stories that we wind up posting to PID News. And through that, she's been listening to some of the information about the new Apostolic Reformation. She recently moved from our neck of the woods, Dayton, And she said that now she's out in Colorado in the Denver area and was thinking about taking a road trip to see Lucifer and Anubis.
Except she says every time she goes to the Denver International Airport, it creeps her out.
Yeah, and I can understand why. Paul in Vancouver pointed out some recent interviews with Lindsay Williams about the oil crisis on, I believe, Alex Jones and elsewhere.
Well, and I think that Lindsay Williams is going in the same direction that we were talking about earlier, that it's really a whole lot bigger than they're painting it to
be. Exactly. And we heard from our friend John in Virginia Beach, who called us last week as well, and gave us some information on pine cones, which is
really
interesting.
And, of course, the biggest one.
The biggest pine cone in the world just happens to be at the Vatican.
Yeah.
And John, you'll...
Sam just walked over here. Like, you're Mom, done, Mom. Yeah. Now, stop.
He pointed out that throughout history, and this is something that Dr. Future did mention in his talk down in Nashville, Tennessee, that the pine cone as a symbol is carried on a staff by, and there are representations from ancient murals and pottery of this pine cone staff being carried by the Egyptian god Osiris, by the Greek god Dionysus, who's another manifestation, and the Pope. There's a pine cone on his staff.
How about that? Well, you know, speaking of Mike Bennett, he also, Dr. Future, he also talked about the pharmakia aspect, and he was this was involved in that talk. And he was mentioning absinthe,
yes,
which may well be legalized again by France.
That's very interesting. Absinthe is supposed to open that third eye, is supposed to open the portals to the other world. I mean, Vincent van Gogh reportedly painted some of his better-known works under the influence. It may have contributed to him cutting off his ear. But the reason that the pine cone was significant was because the pineal gland inside the head, which is supposed to be the third eye, is shaped like a pine cone. So that's the whole reason for it. And that's why I chose that little picture for the interview with the, the kid with the third eye. So it, that's the reason for that. It's creepy. If you've got a comment or a question for us, you can leave us a call any time of the day or night. It goes straight to voicemail, and that's country code 1-317-489-9350.
And you can also join us on Facebook, which really is a great way to connect with us. I check my Facebook messages all the time. I'm on Farmville, and I'm also on Frontierville. So if you want to go on the frontier with me, y'all need to, ask me to be one of your neighbors.
So this is the friendly kind of frontier. I mean, not the kind of, you don't have to carry.
You have to clobber snakes and scare bears.
Well, would that the frontier had been just that simple for our ancestors.
I know.
But it's a great way to hang out together. It is.
But you know what?
Way.
It's something else that we haven't mentioned in a few weeks, and that is a forum that was started and is continuing to be run by a good friend of ours, Daniel Eaton. And
right.
It's the Piercing the Darkness Forum.
And you'll find a link to that at the end of the show notes at PIDradio.com. You'll go there and find like-minded people. This forum is now going on 5 years. And it's a rather small group of people, but some really interesting thinkers in there who will take these ideas and really discuss them and turn them over and examine them from a number of different angles. So it's, but always, mostly always, very cordially.
You'll occasionally get someone sneaking in the back door who wants to, make a little bit of trouble.
Stir things up. But
you know what? You clobber the snake and you scare the bears.
And then you move on. That's right. interview this weekend, again, Sarah Leslie of Discernment Ministries talking about not so much a response to the column by Janet Porter, but looking at what the proper political involvement by Christians looks like. And since Sarah was the former head of Iowa's Right to Life movement and a very early pioneer in the homeschooling movement, she understands a bit about the way the political process works. And so we talked about, if we want to get involved in politics and vote the way we believe, how do we do it without crossing the line into Dominion theology? Next weekend, we've got Minister Dante Fortson on VFTB Live. He's the man behind the Angelic Research Center. So we'll talk about angels, good and bad, and his forthcoming book, As the Days of Noah Were.
Oh, that is going to be so good. I can't wait to read that.
Yeah, looking forward to that. That'll be out in August.
Also, we're going to tease ahead the weekend before 4th of July. your show on July 2nd, I believe, Friday night.
Yes.
We can't tell you exactly who's going to be on it, or can we?
Yes,
we
can.
Do we know for sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're confirming it. In fact, we was exchanging emails last night.
That's just in.
It's going to be live from Roswell. This will be a similar broadcast to the Nashville conference broadcast which was actually pre-recorded. This will be live from Roswell. Guy Malone, Joe Jordan, and Mike Tater Jr., who are presenting a conference in Roswell for the annual UFO festival there called War of the Worlds.
Ooh.
Yeah. And Guy is working on a new presentation, which he's giving us a preview of. And I'm sworn to secrecy, can't reveal it until after the conference.
Oh, that's going to be awesome. And that's live on July the 2nd,
Friday 2nd.
Night, 10 to midnight.
Yep, Eastern Time, GMT minus 5. And in between then, Dante Fortson on next Friday, and the weekend at that, Tom Horn. So until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and Sam is saying goodbye, too. Bye-bye, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Don't let the hard times get you down. Older days will disappear. There's a new day coming. A new forget about the former days and living in the past. God can do a new thing now in a kingdom that will last. He'll make a way across your wilderness like a river.
This is PID Radio.